Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and you know what? It's a new year, and that debt is equally fraudulent. It was equally fraudulent last year, and it's going to be equally fraudulent next year. I'm just going to keep telling you that debt we're not on the hook for. They're going to tell us we're on the hook for, and they're making us think we're on the hook for, and they're spending money to put us on the hook for it. But the point is, all of the money that they're spending, they do not have the authority to spend. And as a matter of fact, welcome back, Tammy. And we kind of talked about this last year, where does government have the power to create Disneyland? In the state of Wyoming, they don't have that power. The federal government doesn't have the power to create parks, things for public amusement, things for, you know, what they would consider a public treasure. There's nothing in the Constitution that they have a responsibility to preserve land that would be perceived as a public treasure. And yet they sure have created all of these powers regarding property. And one of them, I'm sure everybody has heard, where the government has the power to preserve landmarks because of their historical, you know, significance. The federal government, every state government has done that. Hold on here, folks. Have you delegated to that power? This is just a backhanded way for them to take land and property and basically make it public. The point is, our government should not possess the public lands. What they should be doing is they should be protecting the public lands for you and me, protecting them from others as far as, you know, foreigners from coming in and buying them. But they shouldn't be taken, because the day they take them, then they say it's for all of us, but it's really not for any of us. And all they do is they create these regulations of your access and so forth. Now they can control everything. If it is land that is not purchased, it's on the books, and it, let's just say it is available to be sold, then the state may own that per se, because it's not owned. Does that make sense? Not every piece of land is owned, right? There's probably land. Well, we already know that the Yellowstone was unconstitutionally owned and held by the Rockefellers. There was nowhere in the Constitution that allowed him to go all the way out into the territories and buy that land. Wyoming wasn't even a state at that point, right?
Yeah, so who was he buying it from?
So actually, John Rockefeller, if I remember correctly, he bought the land because Grant considered it a national park. And Grant declared that, but that didn't really mean anything. And all that did was that really created a highlight for everybody to go, wow, I mean, there's a big piece of land that the nation considers a treasure. And so Rockefeller goes out and buys it. And then he bequeaths it to the government, because now it's his property, that he can just give it to them as the first national park. That first national park was created under Teddy Roosevelt, if I remember correctly. And in so doing, this was a backhanded, unconstitutional process, because first off, even though Rockefeller bought the land that he had no legal right to, I mean, you should be a resident of the state to be able to buy that property. Remember, if you're not from that state, you're a foreigner. And so Rockefeller should have been a living resident in the state, which he wasn't. And he should have basically, if he was a resident and he bought that land, and that's where he was living, and then he says, you know what, I'm going to sell this land. I'm going to go somewhere else. And I'm going to give this to the United States government. The government basically, you know, if somebody comes along and says, I want to give you this Rolex watch, It's serialized and everything else. It's a, you, there's no doubt you can prove that it's a legitimate Rolex watch. Well, what happens if that guy stole it and he gives it to you? He basically set you up, and now you're possessing stolen property. It's right. not, in other words, it's not yours. And so when he gave that, this is a little bit different, though. When he gave that to the federal government, was there anywhere in the Constitution that allowed them to take that?
Nope.
Not at all. So the fact that they created this land, or they created this this park because it was bequeathed them, didn't mean that it was a legitimate park. They didn't have the enumeration of the Constitution to possess land for park purposes. Period, folks. I know you may love your national parks, but they don't have the constitutional enumerated power or property to possess that. It has to be enumerated. You want them to have parks? Get an amendment. And I'll tell you what, as soon as everybody realizes that they go down this path of trying to say, we want the Constitution, you know, to be amended so that the federal government can possess, you know, these public parks, national parks, instantly everybody go, hold on here. That means that they can't even hold what we got. We're taking them back.
Mm-hmm.
So the day you start trying to legitimize stuff, all of a sudden everything starts to unravel. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so people are starting to get scared. People are starting to realize, I should say, some of the progressives. Now, most of these people, because I had this conversation last year with Matt regarding the illiteracy, because, you know, the fact that we're so illiterate on the Constitution, you know, they're doing all of these things to us. Well, the comment came back from Matt that if they start understanding what we're doing, then, you know, they'll use that against us. And I go, actually, they can't. But the problem is they're equally illiterate. They won't understand what the heck we're doing. It's kind of like they knew that they didn't have the authority to legalize abortion. They knew they didn't have the authority to do all these different things. But they did it, and they duped everybody into believing they could do it. Today, everybody really believes that they can do anything and everything. So there's people actually, like the gang, you know, AOC and her flock, or her underlings, or her fellow team that is out there running an insurrection against the Constitution. They're out there doing things because they really believe that they can. Because they're equally illiterate. So, anyway, that was a rat hole I got to pull myself out of. So, the reason that we're covering content today is a very special day, because today happens to be January 2nd. And this is when the Tory Acts under Continental Congress really took form. The very first Tory Acts technically was October 6th. There's a series of Tories acts that go from 1775 through 1776 that really lay the course out for the colonies' resistance and the Revolutionary War. So the reason why this is so important, why we cover these documents, is because these documents prove what we're doing is legitimate. Under the English banner that these Englishmen had, they had rights that were protected under the Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights. Today, we have those exact same rights protected under the Constitution. If people say that we don't have protection regarding our rights of common law as we perceive them, then all you've got to do, because it doesn't state that specifically, don't and never forget that Ninth Amendment. Because the Ninth Amendment basically says, oh, these things that we didn't list, don't get confused with any enumeration that you can construe that enumeration in the Constitution can deny or disparage any person's rights that are perceived that aren't enumerated. In other words, the Ninth Amendment protects our right of using common law. Even though we don't even have common law courts, we can form a common law committee, assembly, council, or convention. And in this very first Tory Act, because this very first Tory Act is the first response as Continental Congress was forming, because remember they created they first created the Articles of Confederation or Articles of Association in appealing to the king to say, you know, hey, we've kind of organized ourselves here and we're the most humble, the most gracious of servants. And we love you. We love you, King. All that gushy stuff. But we're putting our foot down because we have rights as Englishmen, and we demand these rights, and this is what we're going to do so that you will take us seriously. And so that all happened, if I remember correctly, that all happened prior to the Tory Acts, I think. What I need to do, because I just realized I actually need to look this up. What I need to do is, like I said, look it up on the Document Acts, or I should say the academic source documents page on Reclaiming the Republic. And when I look at the Articles of Association and I open those up and I look at the date, the Articles of Association was created October 20th, 1774. So I'm correct. So the states or the colonies were already organized, and they organized the Continental Congress. But these organizations were called assemblies, conventions, councils, or committees. And it highlights these, and we want to highlight these so that you understand what they're referring to. So this very first this very first message out to these representative bodies is coming from the Continental Congress out to these representative bodies out in the colonies. So go ahead and read this very short act of October 6th.
Resolved that it be recommended to the several provincial assemblies or conventions and councils or committees of safety to arrest and secure every person in their respective colonies who's going at large may, in their opinion, endanger the safety of the colony or the liberties of America.
Okay, so that's a problem because they haven't declared war yet, and they're asking these organized people under the rights of Englishmen to create these assemblies. Now, I got to remember that this is kind of a limited governing body. It is not a formal government because technically the formal government is still the king and his little stooges, Parliament. And because at this point, the king is still sovereign. Parliament has very limited influence, and they were basically there to placate the people of Britain to make them feel like they had some representation. And so, as we look at what was being done and what they were asking to do here, because the king had actually injected his own government, right? I mean, he basically wiped out all the state governments and put in his own. So this is when we started responding. Again, like I said, it was 1774 with the Articles of Association that were finally formed from that Continental Congress. So even before that is when he wiped out the governments, when we started organizing. These organizations, these assemblies, conventions, councils, or committees, depending on what state you lived in, that's what they called them. And this was a representative body. This was not a body of democracy. The people of the area would elect their own representatives, and they would do the bulk of the political work. These were usually the wise old people, and technically I hate to say it, but they were men at that point in time. Not that I hate to say it, but it was reality. These were old men. They were sages. They understood law. They understood the Bible, blah, blah, blah. They were well-educated. And they were well-respected, and so they were elected to represent the people. And as they did, they actually formed these committees in their areas. And then as the committees actually started, you know, getting organized throughout the colony or assemblies, then they would send delegates to a state assembly, and this is where they started forming what they called committees of correspondence. The committees of correspondence were basically communicating back and forth, and this is where the states finally started saying, we need to get organized as a union. In other words, we need to create a body of confederation, you know, or an assembly of the union. And so they did. They got organized, they got even more organized as they all came together, and this is when they formed what they called Continental Congress. And so this is a message out to these local bodies to go arrest people. We haven't even declared war yet. Did they not understand what they were doing? They were going to flag these people and put them at risk. The king was still in control. We haven't even fired a shot yet. Yeah. So look at what they say in the next correspondence. They kind of retract because, you know, obviously from October to January, they got enough feedback from the states to go, hey, do you realize what you just asked us to do? We don't even control the governments. We don't even control the cell, the gels, to throw them into a cell to arrest them. So how do you expect us to do this? So now they come out with this next Tory Act of the infamous, or I should say the famous, January 2nd, which is why we do this every year on January 2nd. Go ahead.
I'm on the green, aren't I?
No. We're going to read the whole thing. So whereas it has been represented to this Congress, yeah.
Whereas it has been represented to this Congress that diverse, honest, and well-meaning but uninformed people in these colonies have by the art and address of ministerial agents been deceived and drawn into erroneous opinions respecting the American cause and the probable issue of the present contest.
There we go. So now they've changed it from these people that would be perceived as loyalists and dangerous to us and our cause of liberty. Now they're calling them, they're just misinformed and deceived. And so go ahead. Now they actually go through and say, resolve, this is what you need to do. Go ahead.
Resolve that it be recommended to the different committees and other friends to American liberty in the said colonies to treat all such persons with kindness and attention, to consider them as the inhabitants of a country determined to be free, mm-hmm. and to view their errors as proceeding rather from want of information than want of virtue or public spirit, to explain to them the origin, nature, and extent of the present controversy, to acquaint them with the fate of the numerous petitions presented to His Majesty, as well as by assemblies as by Congresses, for reconciliation and redress of grievances, and that the last from this Congress, humbly requesting the single favor of being heard, like all others, has proved unsuccessful, to unfold them the various arts of administration to ensure and enslave us, and the manner in which we have been cruelly driven to defend by arms those very rights, liberties, and estates, which we and our forefathers had so long enjoyed unmolested in the reigns of His present Majesty predecessors. And it is hereby recommended to all conventions and assemblies in these colonies liberally to distribute among the people the proceedings of this and the former Congress, the late speeches of the great patriots in both houses of Parliament relative to American grievances, and such other pamphlets and papers as tend to elucidate the merits of the American cause.
Okay. Keep going.
The Congress being fully persuaded that the more our right to the enjoyment of our ancient liberties and privileges is examined, the more just and necessary our present opposition to ministerial tyranny will appear.
Okay, so, interestingly enough, out of this one body, there's a lot. And folks, we could spend a lot of time just breaking down this one paragraph. One of the things that I've highlighted that, you know, I've actually darkened the letters as well, or boldened the letters, is the reference in the beginning, the different committees. And then the reference a little further below, all conventions and assemblies. In other words, there was a lack of inconsistency in what they were referring, but actually not, because they were a little politically correct. They didn't want to just insult everybody just by referring them to committees. Hey, we're not committees. Who's committees? So they wanted to include, but without having to lay it out, committees, assemblies, blah, 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 blah. They just referred to at the front end, the committees and the conventions and assemblies, but they left out councils in this one paragraph. Okay, well, but at least they're trying to speak to all people without having to try to list it each time. The next thing that you really see is they completely changed their tone, didn't they? Well, we don't want to arrest them. What we want to do is we want to look at them and be kind and, you know, treat them with, you know, with respect and dignity and help educate them of their errors, of their ways. You see what I'm saying here? They really changed their tone from October 6th. I mean, it was very harsh language. This goes to us today. I find lots of people, myself included at times, tend to come across harsh or using vinegar instead of honey when we're speaking to people. Now, I can understand getting caught up when, you know, contention, the spirit of contention arises and somebody starts slinging insults at you, that it's very easy to sling insults back and to, you know, do those things. I want to impress upon everybody that when Christ went into the dens of iniquity, he didn't go in there insulting them, judging them, telling them they're all going to, you know, die, you know, eternal damnation. In other words, he didn't walk in there like a Baptist minister, did he?
Mm-mm.
He walked in there, I'll bet you anything, he walked in there with love, empathy, and said, I know what you guys are going through. I know how hard things are. And he appealed to them to say, there is hope, and the hope is through me. He was there bearing his soul to the sinners, and he was being excoriated by the righteous Pharisees, or I should say the hypocrites. Because they said, well, why are you going in there? And actually, I think his apostles asked him. And he goes, why, you know, spiritually, these are the people who are sick. We should be tending to the sick. And so, anyway, most people today, you know, they come across like that Baptist minister and basically call him out. I understand that in general terms, I'm guilty of that. Because of the way I speak, people may perceive that. Be clear, you'll never hear me say that we need to stone people for, you know, what they believe and those types of things. I may call things out as a sin, but as we should identify the sin, we should try to give love and empathy to the sinner. And so I try to, you know, don't do as I do, but, you know, do what he did. And, you know, because I fall short, you know, so don't follow necessarily me, but, you know, Christ is the perfect example. And when you walk into your county commissioners, when you walk into these bodies of government, these representatives, they do not know. As a matter of fact, this is the appeal here. They're trying to get these people who are enlightened to recognize that their rights are being violated to help touch the hearts and minds of those who are actually, you know, applauding Britain for their tyranny.
Yeah.
Wake these people up. That is really the message here that I think we can transform, that everybody should be able to go, wow, that I should be doing that too. That's how we win. Now, we're going into break in just a sec here. So when we come back, we'll dive into the next paragraph. But that being said, this right here, they talk about this redress of grievances. So actually, I'll highlight these things so that when we come back, we'll actually point out how they've already started talking about First Amendment petitions. Okay. Because that's what the committees and that's what Congress was doing. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so when we kind of look at this, is there anything, Tammy, that jumps out to you that needs to be pointed out as well? In other words, there's some other things here that I glossed over, something very specific, and you know, this isn't a test, okay? So, the further down we go into details, the harder it is. So I get that. But did you notice that he mentioned petitions? Or they were talking about petitions for the redress of grievances. You notice that? It's actually in two separate spots here. They actually talk about, and this is down in the fifth line, they're basically getting the people, or getting these assemblies, these committees, to acquaint the people, to acquaint them with the fate of the numerous petitions presented to His Majesty, as well as by assemblies, as by congresses, for reconciliation and redress of grievances. And that the last from this Congress humbly requesting the single favor of being heard like all the others has proved unsuccessful. Down below that, right when he's with the highlighted part of all conventions and assemblies, the rest just follow in line. All the conventions and assemblies in these states, in the colonies, is that what they're saying, liberally to distribute among the people the proceedings of this and former Congress, the late speeches of the great patriots in both houses of parliament relative to American grievances, and such other pamphlets and papers as tend to elucidate, to help educate, to help clarify the merits of the American cause. In other words, this is how they're going to equally inform these uninformed loyalists. That makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hey, we're doing the right thing here. We're petitioning them and begging them to, you know, do us right here. We're Englishmen, for God's sake. Anyway, okay, so.
Yeah, kind of sounds like what we're trying to do right now.
Yes, right, correct. So we're Americans. We're U.S. citizens, for heaven's sake. Okay, so let's go into the next paragraph.
Okay, and with respect to all such unworthy Americans, as regardless of their duty to their creator, their country, and their posterity, have taken part with our oppressors and influenced by the hope or possession of ignominious rewards, strive to recommend themselves to the bounty of administration by misrepresenting and traducing the conduct and principles of the Friends of American Liberty and opposing every measure formed for its preservation and security.
Yeah, okay, so that's a little difficult word. It's ignominious.
Ignominious.
Yep. Ignominious. And so these are the, I think, let me see if the synonyms, humiliating or embarrassing or discomforting, shameful, disgraceful, that's what it means, by the hope of possessing these shameful rewards. Anyway, Okay, so what he's basically talking, what they're pointing to now is that there are these Americans who are actually, you know, violating, you know, this, their country and these principles, and they actually even point to the Creator. And with respect to all such unworthy Americans, as regardless of their duty to their Creator, their country, and their prosperity, in other words, so they have this duty to their Creator, right? We all have this duty, and they have a duty to their country, and they have a duty to their children, their offspring, have taken part with the oppressors and influenced by the hope of or possession of these shameful rewards, strive to recommend themselves to the bounty of administration by misrepresenting the traducing or by misrepresenting and traducing the conduct of these principles of the Friends of American Liberty. Now, traducing is criticizing, right? Traducing is disparaging, maligning, defaming. So that's what he's talking about there. They're talking about, you know, language is a very powerful thing. And back in those days, they had a very good grasp. But you know what? They didn't have a grasp of the combustion engine. They didn't have a grasp of, you know, the genetics, you know, or DNA and the things of science that we have today. So most people are, you know, in awe of the, you know, the vernacular of the framers and, you know, their prowess with the English language and so forth. But, you know, that was one of the only things they had. I'm not trying to defend our illiteracy today. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help people place context, you know, because I'm guilty of, you know, misspellings and those types of things because I've been consumed in trying to learn other things. It's not that I thought English was that important. I knew I needed to speak and communicate, but I wasn't going to become a major in it. It was definitely something that didn't appeal to me. I loved math. And as I tell people all the time, when we really look at our education system, and forgive me for going down this rat hole, but it's worth saying. When we look at our education system that we had as baby boomers and the following generations, and it's gotten worse and worse every day and every year, we used to say, when am I going to need calculus? When am I going to need all of this math? The truth is, you're not. Over 80%, if not greater, of people engaged and employed do not use that math at all. It's the same thing with literature. It's the same thing with sciences. We do not use it on a normal, everyday basis. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't expand ourselves so that we can understand things, or when we actually are presented with things that we don't understand, it might lend to helping us understand because we just understand more and it helps us understand the unknown or place a level of understanding to what we perceive as unknown. The point that I'm trying to make is that we have this education and we're being given all of these types of things, but the one thing that we're not being educated on is our Constitution. When in your everyday life does not knowing your Constitution have a bad effect?
Every day.
Okay, so if it is that bad, then why is it that nobody's doing anything about their illiteracy on the Constitution? Ah. See, I was coming like a lamb to the slaughter, and actually I was the lion in wolf's clothing. Because technically, folks, this only proves, you know, our hypocrisy that, well, we, you know, we want to speak good. As a matter of fact, there's a scripture for this, you know, with their lips, they do honor me, but with their hearts, they have removed themselves far from me. In other words, we say we want, you know, we want the Constitution, but we don't even understand it to actually get there. So I know I'm coming across rough and judgmental, and I think I spoke earlier that I come across that way, and I don't want to. But sometimes I just can't help myself. So anyway, as I giggle or laugh or what have you, let's go back to the next resolved.
Okay, resolved that it be recommended to the different assemblies, conventions, and committees or councils of safety in the United Colonies by the most speedy and effectual measures to frustrate the mischievous
machinations. These are designs. These are, yeah, you know, political thoughts and designs of somebody having ill will or what have you. These are evil designs. Go ahead.
Okay. To frustrate the mischievous machinations and restrain the wicked practices of these men. And it is the opinion of this Congress that they ought to be disarmed, and the more dangerous among them either kept in safe custody or bound with sufficient sureties to their good behavior.
Now they've kind of clarified who we need to, you know, get, who you need to focus on and, you know, basically contain. It's not that they, you know, they believe that most of the people are just ill-informed, but they are saying that there are those who are very mischievous that are actually, they need to be restrained. And that this Congress believes that they need to be disarmed, and the more dangerous among them either need to be kept, you know, in a safe custody or bound. Wow. You know, this right of due process. Did they use that type of patience in those days? They knew that this is what happens when we were going through Madison's notes on nullification. This is about preservation at this point. And you've got people that are living in your state that are absolutely helping and assisting and being so dubious and, you know, attacking liberty that you have to constrain them, contain them, disarm them. This is big. When we really look today and we understand that there are some people, dare I say, if you vote Democrat and you believe that gun control is necessary, it starts with you. Because anybody that believes that should not have a gun. And I believe we need to enforce it. I believe we need to go through everybody's homes that have voted Democrat and disarm them, just like they're saying here. Because these people are running an insurrection against our Constitution. They've basically absolved themselves of being a U.S. citizen, so therefore they are not protected under the Constitution. So the first thing we have to do is any Democrat, any communist out there, even those in office, need to be pulled down, removed, I should say. They should be stripped of their citizenship as well as their office or their position, and they should be disarmed. And then we should really consider whether we have to deport them or not. I am not an advocate for causing harm. I'm not calling to put people in jail, to taking away their liberty. But I am saying that if they're that dangerous, like AOC, where AOC wants to open her mouth and actually attack our liberty and our Constitution, she needs to be deported. Any and all of these people, Obama, all of them, I am in favor of deporting, not in harming. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's super harsh.
Well, but you got to understand, you're obligated. Remember, they kind of started this off up above, the paragraph above this, that there's this duty to our Creator and the country. And as a citizen, you must be willing to be compelled to take up arms to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. Domestic. These are domestic enemies against the Constitution. Ergo, you have to treat them harshly. They're enemies. Mm-hmm. Okay. When it comes to these types of issues, you know, there are things, these are black and white issues. There may be some gray, but not much. And when we look at the post part of this, when we actually get to the end, you're going to be surprised what they ended up doing with these Tories. Do you know?
I don't.
Ah, folks, this is why understanding our history is so helpful, because everything I'm an advocate for is what they did. So I'll leave it at that, because we've got, 13 minutes. So let's keep going. And you covered that. Resolve that they be authorized. Go ahead.
And in order that the said assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety may be enabled with greater ease and facility to carry this resolution into execution.
Okay. So that's kind of an administrative line, okay, that you're enabled to go do this. Resolve that they be authorized. Go ahead.
Resolve that they be authorized to call to their aid whatever continental troops stationed in or near their respective colonies may be conveniently spared from their more immediate duty, and the commanding officers of such troops are hereby directed to afford the said assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety all such assistance in executing this resolution as they may require, which consistent with the good of the service may be supplied.
Okay, so even though, and I'm going to, because we got to address this, even though the Declaration of Independence has not come forward, hostilities have actually started. And as a matter of fact, if you've never read 1776, David McCullough does a really good account of the hostilities that were happening up in New England, where George Washington and the Continental Militia, or the Continental Services, or the forces were up there dealing with the British. And in this engagement was one of Washington's first points of recognizing the divine hand of providence intervening. There was a point in time where they were up on a hill, I forget, and there's this bay, I think Back Bay or something like that, that was nearby them. And they literally lost the hill overnight, and they knew the forces were right there by them and by Back Bay. And I don't know which way they retreated, but one of the things that actually happened to allow them to successfully retreat was there was a dense fog that laid on the land until they all got out. And then the fog lifted, just like what happened in New York. And most people don't know that story. Most people know the story about New York, how they literally got on boats and they ferried themselves from one side of the river or whatever, the bay, I think it was a river, and they ferried themselves over to the other side, and the British general was getting ready to seize on them when all of a sudden he realized that they were on the other side of the river already. As soon as the fog lifted, they charged and they go, oh, they're all gone. I mean, literally, as the last boat was coming across, that's when it was done. And they quickly beat foot and got out of there. In other words, the Continental Army was basically a harassment force. In other words, they would harass and then they would run away. But in other cases, they actually started turning, and I believe it was in 1776 in New Jersey when Washington crossed the Delaware and caught the Hessians all drunk on Christmas Eve and was able to basically take them, arrest them, and occupy that area for a while. Anyway, notice again here how they kind of inject the naming convention, assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety. How many times have you heard councils of safety? As a matter of fact, the only time you ever hear, oh, it's committees of safety, because these people believe that today, they believe that they have, accurate understanding that they were committees of safety. No, that's not so. Obviously, there was different naming conventions, and again, they repeated in the next line, as from the first line above this and the paragraph that you just read, they referred to them as councils of safety, and again below, councils of safety, committees and councils of safety. So anyway, okay, go ahead with the next one.
resolved that all detachments of Continental troops, which may be ordered on the business in the foregoing resolution mentioned, be, while so employed, under direction and control of the assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety aforesaid.
Okay. So what they're wanting to do is basically make sure that you employ those forces that are out there that may be able to, you know, help, you know, take control of these things. So the next one, go ahead.
Resolved that it be recommended to all the United Colonies to aid each other on request from their respective assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety and county committees on every emergency, and to cultivate, cherish, and increase the present happy and necessary union by a continual interchange of mutual good offices.
Okay. So in other words, let's open up the communication line. Let's help each other. And let's keep the chatter going so that everybody knows who needs what. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
So the next paragraph.
Whereas the execrable barbarity with which this unhappy war has been conducted on the part of our enemies, such as burning our defenseless towns and villages, exposing their inhabitants without regards to sex or age, to all the miseries which loss of property, the rigor of the season, and inhuman devastation can inflict, exciting domestic insurrections and murders, bribing the savages to desolate our frontiers, and casting such as us as the fortune of war has put into their power, into goals there to languish in irons and want, compelling the inhabitants of Boston, in violation of the treaty, to remain confined within the town, exposed to the insolence of the soldiery and other enormities, as the mention of which decency and humanity will forever blush, may justly provoke the inhabitants of these colonies to retaliate. Retaliation.
All right, so they're basically throwing insults of how Britain is basically violating, you know, these fundamental rights of the people, how they're just doing all of these things. I mean, they're calling them brutes. Okay, so when it comes to war, when it comes to the exertion of force, the exertion of power, that is not to be done gently. And I would understand why somebody would come along and say, oh, you brute, or what have you. Bottom line, the person that usually says that is a person that's not in position to whip, you know, dish out the upcomings that that person needs. In other words, you know, there's a bit of humility in the Continental Congress because they know they don't have the ability to just, you know, beat them out, or the language would be a lot different. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of creating this plea to, you know, this barbaric, you know, the barbaric actions that they're having to deal with because they can't put these things off them, at least not at this point. And it takes a long time for them to finally get there, right? I mean, the war went on for, what, let me see, 1776, we declared independence. And the war ended in 1783, so shoot, that's 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay, so go ahead with the next one.
Result that it be recommended to them to continue mindful that humanity ought to distinguish the brave, that cruelty should find no admission among a free people, to take care that no page in the annals of America be stained by a recital of any action which justice or Christianity may condemn, and to rest assured that whatever retaliation may be necessary or tend to their security, this Congress will undertake the disagreeable task.
Okay, so we're going to do everything we can. No promises, but we're going to do everything we can to basically, you know, hold these brutes accountable. Okay, so this next one's kind of highlighted. Go ahead.
Result that the assemblies, conventions, or committees, or councils of safety be requested forthwith to transmit to this Congress copies of all the petitions, memorials, and remonstrances.
Remonstrances,
which have been by their respective colonies presented to the throne or either House of Parliament since the year 1762, and that they also inform this Congress whether any and what answers were given to them.
Okay. What are they saying here?
To gather all the petitions they've given to Parliament.
To the throne and to Parliament, either house, and what have they done in answering it?
Mm-hmm.
So this is in January, right? So they've already talked about showing them our petitions that Congress has sent to the king. And, you know, then they're now right here, they're saying, send us your petitions so that we can, you know, understand what you've done and whether they've how they've responded. Why is this important?
Because they have to know if any of their grievances have been answered.
Okay. But there's something a little more to this than that. And you don't know because it's something that is concocted in GR's head because it's just out there, right? And so the one thing that we all know, and everybody cites this, is the petitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jefferson's draft, this is his draft on the amendments. So does not the Declaration of Independence point to these petitions?
Yeah.
Does it not?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. In other words, it's highlighted. And what I'm looking for is the original Declaration of Independence. And so the original Bill of Rights. I'm going to just do a quick search so that I can actually call this out. As it's coming up with, I got declaration. Let me, I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-S. Sorry, folks. I hate doing this when I'm not prepared. But I do know that Thomas Jefferson, in his original draft, and even in the final draft of the Declaration of Independence, it has literally said, and I got it right here. So he points out petitions, right? And we'll actually find it in the very front, if I remember correctly. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injuries. In other words, the two times or three times it has come up, and we just ran out of time. So I apologize. So we'll come back to this, and we'll start off with these petitions and the focus on this in our next show so that we can help you understand. We're connecting the dots for you. We're going through the documents that absolutely supports everything we need to be doing. This is why we need your help. I am G.R. Mobley. We are Reclaiming the Republic, and ergo, we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.